All right, fuck it. Okay, hey, welcome to Ouch My 30s, the podcast about the decade no one prepared us for. Okay, Los Angeles. I think the last episode I posted, I think last episode I posted, I was attacked by a homeless person and I was like bemoaning that and probably some shitty date that I went on. But I gotta what, all right, let me start with LA. I got sick like the last month I was there, and it kind of put like a damper on everything. I had like that RSV virus that like they did not advertise as well as COVID, so I was like unprepared and didn't know how to respond to it. And was way worse than COVID, coincidentally. I was like sick for 2 weeks and then it kind of like lingered afterwards. And it wasn't COVID, I got tested and all that shit. And it was like rainy the entire. It sucked. Like LA. There was like some good stuff that I enjoyed, but there was an open mic that I went to, but LA just it lost its luster. And I'm not saying that in a it's really like kind of it's really cool and hip to shit on LA, and it always has, and I've always shit on LA, and I've always obviously had problems with LA if you know me. But none of those reasons that I used to have with LA were the ones that were troubling me this time. It just felt like tired and like that dangerous element that LA has always had was always sort of counterbalanced by the fact that you were in the game, you were in the action, the stars were there, the business was there, and everything now is just so like I went to the Comedy Store while I was there, and the Comedy Store has always been a shit show and never been a place that's really like boosted my appreciation for the world of comedy and stand up. But and I haven't been there in a while, and I'm it's been a minute. But normally I would just sort of linger in the hallways of the Comedy Store and you would just kind of like soak up some residual comedic energy. It was just a nice place to like linger as a depressed alcoholic. And now it's like so corporatized and like they had guys with like earpieces and the hallways were completely cleared and like eventually like a guy came up to me just like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm a comedian. I was just kind of hanging out." He's like, "Well, you have to hang out like at the front or something." I was like, "Okay." And that's their business and fine. And like it makes sense to not have like random drunk loners like just lingering in the hallway. I get that. But it was more just like symbolically of like where LA was at. It seems sadder and I didn't really see a way to reconcile that. It just seemed like everyone's like, well, this is life now. And like that residual COVID PTSD was still there. So I don't know. Anyway, I didn't feel the vibe as much. And then I was like sick and, it speaks to broader issues in my life. I'm trying to like come up with a clever or very like insightful appraisal of this like depressive energy that I felt there this time. Because it was much different. Like I've always hated LA, but it's like there was something to hate. Now it was a sort of like something I pitied. Yeah, that's it. Like LA, like in back in the day, like in 2016, 2013, whenever I was there, I was like, oh, the fucking man, like going to auditions and all these shitty actors. It's like you don't see people anymore. That's the thing. Like I kept dry my buddy Brian, he's like, you going to the wrong LA. You going to the places nobody goes anymore, which is true. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, that's it's where I go. It's like what I do. Like Eagle Rock, we went to Eagle Rock. We got some empanadas and cruised around. It was nice. But like, even there, I don't know. There's, well, numerically, I think 179,000 people. No, 700,000 people have left California since 2020, since the pandemic. And then 179,000 have left LA County. So there, it's just like, it's a ghost town. Everyone fucking left. And that energy is palpable. And I just. I'm developing an app with a former coworker that kind of is trying to address. I'm not going to speak too much further on that unless you sign an NDA before you listen. Anyway, so once again, I left and I was okay with it just because the energy that I'm holding on to, or the person that I'm trying to hold on to, and the way of life that I am trying to hold on to, which I've said on this podcast, you're an idiot if you're trying to do that. The world is different. And the world will never go back to what it was. So you're fooling yourself if you're trying to like recreate that. And I was, I thought I could go partner up with some old friends and, fire up some old dalliances, some old romances, and I always do that when I go to LA. I keep thinking I can like pick back up where my life last left off, and it's like, no, people have long moved on in their lives, and or even if they haven't, I mean they have, but they change. People change. People's changes. This girl, the first girl I like, I guess went on a date on when I moved to LA in like 2013, a comedian. I kind of, I was aloof with her, blew her off. I didn't, we just like went on a couple of dates, nothing happened. We didn't sleep together or anything. But I kind of just, I was like, yeah, I don't know. And cool. Hit her back up, or we matched on a dating app. And she had lost some weight and was looking good. And, we like talked on the dating app for a while. And then she's like, I was like, hey, you want to grab a drink? And she's like, yeah, I guess. I've been very humbled by the past couple of years that she was like, I don't fucking, she's like, go fuck yourself, basically. And again, that's my fault for trying to go back in time. If I could turn back time. So that was a bit humbling. And then I went on a couple of dates. One date, the girl was, I told her about my book, thinking that would be like, oh, you wrote a book. What an intellectual, interesting, virtuoso you are. I'm enamored. And she's like, that book sounds like you need therapy. I was like, okie doke. And then I went on another date, and then she texted me the next day. She's like, I was getting more friend vibes between us. And I was like, oh, I agree. So, this is just a good, this is the part of the movie where Rocky loses everything. And he's really doing some soul searching. So, or maybe it's just Los Angeles. And I have moved on from the dynamics of that place. And I've long, I mean, I moved on from that place fucking almost 10 years ago. But yet, I keep going back. And were it not for my friend Brian, I probably would not set foot back in that city anyhow. And, yeah, but I needed that. I needed to be reminded of what a semblance of having close connections was like, because I really haven't had that. And that's been the most brutal part of the post-pandemic world, is this like these severing, or these disintegration of these connections that we used to have, either by virtue of the fact that people just move on, or the way people interact has changed, and people's health and their lifestyles change, and blah blah blah. It But again, this isn't the pity party. It's like every time I go do these things, I learn something and I improve and I grow in some way. I forget how I grew this time, but it was interesting doing stand up, just being the older guy and kind of seeing that, like, oh, these kids are all like 24, 25, and I'm 36, approaching 37. So like even our sensibilities are different, and like the jokes and material that I talked about, they're like rolling their eyes, and I'm like, no, this is like what you talk about. You don't like go up there and like, everyone was doing the impersonation of a comedian rather than like actual stuff that happens in their lives, which is whatever. So anyway, I got the fuck out of there. I did one of my classic, let me burn down this apartment and shoulder roll out the window in the 0 hour, and night rider my way out of here. And I flew to Madison, Wisconsin, to decompress, because I've long needed to just, and that's a thing too. I keep like not directly going after the thing I need to be doing, and you guys tell me if you feel this way. My current balance in life, the source of all my inner turmoil and torment currently, is this battle between directly addressing my health issues that ail me, both physical and mental, and pursuing my dreams of being a comedian and a writer and a creator. Now, it is hard to be a comedian, writer, and a creator when you are in constant physical pain or fatigued from various issues, and you have to you comedy now is a contact sport. It was I could I remember I did a gig in at the Punchline Philly, and it was like a 2 hour, 2.5 hour drive from my house, and like this is when my neck pain was really bad, and I just white knuckled it. I got my fucking BMW that was killing my back because it was wildly uncomfortable but looked cool. I drove 2.5 hours. I got an Airbnb. The pain was fucking horrible. I could barely talk to the other comedians in the green room because I had a pinched nerve or a pulled muscle in my neck. So I drank heavily to numb the pain, and I got on stage and I did my act, but it sucked ass because I was just saying the jokes rather than being in the moment because I was in so much fucking pain. I was trying to be a facsimile of a comedian, like I was talking about before. Well, the material was good. I was just in a lot of pain. And I went back to the Airbnb, and I remember laying in that fucking bed, your SEM muscle from my collarbone up to the behind my ear, which just felt like it was on fire. I was like gobbling Tylenol and drinking, which you're for sure not supposed to do. And I drove. It's and then like, ugh, I forgot why I'm talking about that. What was I talking about? I'm a little drunk and high now. I think the weed's kicking in. Oh yeah, so your health and pursuing your creative outlets, they are not mutually exclusive. They are inextricably connected. So I went to Madison, Wisconsin to go see this myofascial release specialist, because the one in LA was $300 a session, and in Reseda, in a 45-minute drive from where I, it's just like my life is a fucking logistical nightmare. It's like, why is it so hard to just. There's so much noise in between the things you need. And I think as we grow older, we get better at, or at least need to appreciate better, the noise in between the things we need. And it's really the beauty of getting older, I think, is where it's like, you get a little bit more cutthroat about that kind of stuff, where you're like, I don't have time to humor shit that is getting in the way of things I desperately need. And the consequence is that that's sometimes relationships, or it's quote unquote fun, going out and having a good time, where it's like, I can't do that. I can't afford it physically. I can't afford it financially. I can't afford it mentally. So, went to Wisconsin because this is like, not a lot of people do this type of physical therapy. It was good. It was great. She observed a lot of physical guarding, emotional guarding, which, basically, is this interesting to you guys? I don't know. It helped, but again, I'm only there for 2 days, and I hop in a plane and I continue my travels. So I don't know. I think I want to go back because it's a obviously, the polar opposite, diametrically opposed to Los Angeles. Quieter, smaller, whiter. God, it was so white. That's the other thing too. As I get older, my fucking optimism, or my yeah, I guess my optimism and romanticism of all these different places in the country that I'm like, oh, I love meeting rednecks and seeing how different people think. I don't give a fuck anymore. I don't give a fuck with how these people's belief systems are. These fucking like, it wasn't so much like hostile, like open racism or whatever. It was just like I was just like I wasn't there. I'm sitting at a bar. And there's just no eye contact or acknowledgement of my presence. And that may not necessarily be a racial thing, but it's for sure a Midwestern thing, where like if you're not a part of their tribe or vetted, like people don't talk outside of their little like I already know you kind of thing. It's that Midwestern Minnesota nice shit. So that was the downfall. But I did an open mic and the comedians there were pretty cool. They were, hospitable. And that's always generally the case, except for Nashville. Every comedy town I go to, if you're like half, if you're somewhat remotely funny or like not a deviant asshole, like comedians will take you in. And that they're really the last stronghold of a safe space for loners, which is why, this modern paradigm of comedy is so fucking annoying, because it's all this like rules and regulations and gatekeeping and what you are and aren't allowed to say, and it's all myopic and siloed, where it's like, we have a women open mic, and we have black night, and we have gay night, and we have Asian night. It's like, no, are you a fucking comedian or are you not? All right. God. And it's really heartbreaking, because it's just like it was always the place. I saw the amount of heartbroken people in there, and I took such comfort and joy. And I didn't necessarily like these people, but it made me feel good that I knew there was a place that no matter how much I fucked up in my life, at some point I could be a 49-year-old divorced dad who could show up to an open mic and he'd feel fucking at home, and he'd have a place that he, for a couple, for an hour or two, could belong to something. And that shit fucking matters, man. I remember Adam Izzo called him Coach back when we had our open mic after my buddy Brian and I bankrupted our coffee shop. We started an open mic at the Irish bar next to the business we bankrupted, and we just like we're like, all right, well, guess we're partying here, or this is the new pirate ship. And we did an open mic there, and it was just this rogues gallery of psychopaths, and there were chicks there too, and no one that I observed try to like, harass them or make them feel bad. If anything, we were protective of them, and it's just, the world in comedy has just become this awful fucking, like, male comedians are trying to fuck the female comedians, and there's not enough diversity in this lineup, so we have to boycott this room or this producer and this comedy. It's like, shut the fuck up and write a funny joke. You'll be loved for it. So anyway. So Madison was the one open mic I did was fairly promising in that regard. I don't know. I feel like the Midwest in general, they're just more like if you do work, if you're a worker, you get treated relatively well. I don't know. I've always had a relatively good time there. So I did that, flew back home, back in the woods. I don't plan on being here long. I'm now officially unemployed. I've never been on unemployment. I've never had a job where that like I could get unemployment. I've been doing acting and all these like freelance gigs my entire adult life, and now the past two like corporate jobs I've had. I'm like, oh, I can go on unemployment, so I'm gonna do that, and I'm gonna use this time to get well, get healthy, get these massages, go somewhere warm, dip my body. See, Madison's nice, but I want to go to Miami because I want to be somewhere warm. I don't know. That's really, and that's the fucked up thing. It's like, for as depressed and suicidal as I often am, and I say that with I say that carefully, because I don't mean to make light of people who feel those feelings, but it's less like I'm going to kill myself. It's more like there are so many things that I do not enjoy about my existence, and I'm not gonna, but man, sometimes do I wanna. It's like that Norm Macdonald joke. He's like, "Hey, guy said, hey, killed himself. Can you believe that? Yeah, what you can't believe." That's not how the joke goes. That's just a Norm Macdonald impression. But it's kind of like that, where it's like you can't believe why someone would want to. I should probably not stay in this house too long. Yes, being alone in the gray upstate woods is not. It's not a long-term plan. Well, anyway, that's the update from Los Angeles. It was kind of nice. I got some blood work done while when I was in LA, because I've just been like tired and just like feel awful, and it's a lot of things. I've got low vitamin D, mildly anemic, low white blood cells. I'm like, is this AIDS or cancer? Like, what do we got here? But I've always had that. I think it's related to the anemia. Super sexy. And that's the other thing too. Like, I've given up on trying to impress women right now. I'm just like, look, either in the next couple of years I figure it out and I become a dynamo and I become wildly famous and successful, or oh, that's the other thing my buddy Brian was talking about to me. This episode dedicated to Brian, my one and only love. He was ill with something and we were joking, or he said like, I don't know how you guys do it without maternal support. Like, he's married, he has a wife. And I'm like, yeah, now you understand my pain, and I get it now. God, do I get it that in your 30s, like, you're just not invincible anymore. Like, you can't, like, shoulder roll off a moving truck like you could in your 20s and be like, ha-ha, I'm invincible. Like, the smallest ailments make you fucking, face your mortality so intimately in your 30s. You're just like, I need the warmth of a woman to guide me. And that's all it is. Like, half the time you're not even actually that ill or sick. But just like the comforting presence of like you're a woman that is, not a family member is super fucking needed. And only until it was too late did I realize that before I was wildly aloof with the few women in my life who might have been that for me. So, hubris. But it certainly is making me very appreciative of when and if a romantic opportunity arises where that becomes the case. Because DeVal's really learning the lessons right now. Really getting that crash course in my mid to late 30s about how to be a decent human being. So yeah, I mean, it makes a world of difference. And women are powerful and wonderful for that reason, for so many reasons. And their ability to sort of absorb the male degradation over the years is very much a part of why I think people fall in love, or a practical reason why people fall in love. Yes, A, you don't want to be alone in your old age, probably. But also, let's like, yeah, it helps to navigate all these fucking things that I've bitched about into this microphone for the last couple of years with someone. And I did have someone for a little while, who was that, but I didn't appreciate it in that time. And, that's that. And at this point too, like in what I perceive to be a weakened version of myself, like I don't particularly want to be someone's boyfriend right now because I feel like shit. And I don't want to be a burden on someone I love. And that girl I was seeing, that's what I was becoming. So, yeah. Take care of yourself, guys. It's very important that no matter where you go or what your dreams are, the first thing in that step towards those dreams is a healthy you. It's not always clear, it's not always clear what your sickness is, like what your ailment is, and it's not always, a physiological ailment. It's like you may have things going on, but you may have pathologies and self-sabotaging behaviors that are making you quote unquote sick. A fear of success, there's so many things I look back on. I'm just like, you goddamn fool. Like, I wish you would just have asked for help or sought something, some way to remediate this thing you were struggling with rather than dramatically, gallop, whatever, anyway. I don't know. But there is good. There are positive things. It's not all bad. I'm working on a project with an old, as I mentioned, coworker from my previous corporate job that I'm excited about. I've made more peace with my family home and really looking at it as like something I want to invest my energy into, and the East Coast in general. Like the West Coast to me just seems unstable. I remember the power went out when I was in LA, and it was just my block, but I didn't know that because I was in this apartment complex. And I was like, huh, am I gonna have to fight my way out of Los Angeles County barefoot with a kitchen knife? With no car? Like, it was just an eerie feeling to have to think about like relying on that unstable of a place in an emergency. It's like, God fucking, ugh, bad feeling. And yeah, now I'm like, just want to fortify the woods. I want to be safe and loved and held. And I don't see that happening in larger cities these days. Everything just seems like a clusterfuck. Anything I can read to you guys? Let's just pick up what do we got here? I'm just gonna choose a random notebook. This is a work notebook. Yep, it's got money and bills. This is all. Yeah, this is just money and bills. That's not fun. How about a magazine from the 90s? Maybe I can read that real quick. This is as a way to end. All right, yeah, that's funny. All right, how about PC Gamer Magazine from the year 1994, September 1994. The cover says the year of the PC. I'm just going to read a random article. This is, God damn it. This is just a little blast from the past just to give you guys a glimpse into the world of how I think. All right. This seems appropriate. I don't know what this is in reference to. It's called The Experienced Virgin. This is about Virgin Interactive, Richard Branson's company back in the day when they made CD-ROM games. Although a lot of stuff the Virgin Interactive, although a lot of the stuff Virgin Interactive was showing may be quite a ways from completion, it was hard not to be impressed with the quality of the previews we saw. Virgin has carved out a solid reputation as a top software publisher, and this massive new crop of titles should bolster that rep even now. You guys don't care about this. I just collect a lot of old magazines. This house is a fucking crypt or a museum. Don't like Pedro Pascal. Like, I don't like him because he's clearly like queer or gay, but he doesn't really own up to it. That's what bothers me about it. He plays these really like macho roles, and it's not to say that like I don't know how I got on this topic, but he plays these like macho masculine roles, which is fine, as an actor. Although if it was the opposite, there'd be an uproar about straight man playing a gay character these days. But I wish he would just like own up to it more, because that would give like a little bit more like visibility or like. Would make the narrative more interesting, kind of owning that a role that is typically not allowed for that type of person in real life. Don't know. He's just like I like Scott Thompson on The Kids in the Hall. I would be okay with him playing like a Clint Eastwood type character because off camera. I don't know what I'm saying. I sound like a bigot every time I talk. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a latent homosexual, and I'm threatened by his. He's just I don't know. Just everything, but TV bothers me. Everything's just got like a fucking. I'm just such a bitter old man. Oh, there it is. Little Bukowski. I'll read that. Factotum. Here we go. Do I have a Oh, here we go. Yeah, we got some highlights. I'm gonna read two. This is from Charles Bukowski's Factotum. I was a man who thrived on solitude. Without it, I was like another man without food or water. Each day without solitude weakened me. I took no pride in my solitude, but I was dependent on it. The darkness of the room was like sunlight to me. I took a drink of wine. Heard that. I gotta reread Women. That's the other thing too. I remember reading Bukowski's book Women, and as a like probably my mid-20s, and you romanticize sort of that like Lotharia, is that a word? Just being a drunkard, womanizing, self-involved, brooding artist, having sex with women and, just kind of lazily making your way through life. But at the end of the book, he weeps into like the arms of this kind of one stable, reliable woman in his life. And at the time reading it, I knew that it was significant, but I didn't know why. Because I had never been faced with that type of, like I wasn't in a position where I would ever not have options, as a late 20s guy, like good looking, things are going relatively okay, but I knew that one day I would. And now looking back at that end where he's like crying, and I don't know if that's actually how I'm remembering what I remember when I first read it, and the only time I read it, which was in my like mid 20s. And my that's always stood out in my brain, like him like coming to terms with like his philandering, like not fulfilling him. So I gotta reread that because clearly that's where I am in life. All right, I'll read one more passage from Bukowski, and then I'll thank you guys for listening to me publicly share how I ruined my life. I'll read it as Bukowski. That was all a man needed, hope. It was lack of hope that discouraged a man. I remember my New Orleans days, living on 2 5-cent candy bars a day for weeks at a time in order to have leisure to write. But starvation, unfortunately, didn't improve art. It only hindered it. A man's soul was rooted in his stomach. A man could write much better after eating a porterhouse steak and drinking a pint of whiskey than he could ever write after eating a nickel candy bar. The myth of the starving artist was a hoax. Don't know, that's really good, Bukowski. But I agree with him. I agree with him. Nothing wrong with making some money, eating a nice fat fucking steak, and living the good life while you share your opinion on it. You don't have to kill yourself to live. That's a child's game. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the half-hour mark. I think this is one of my longer episodes. If you have made it this far, thank you so much. I do appreciate you. Leave a review, leave a star rating on whatever platform you're listening to this on. It really does mean a lot to me because it's been a journey, and I'm still on it, and I'm gonna stick with it. So, thank you guys. Love you.